Big show for you here today. It is the final data dump of the 2025 NFL season. Ray Garvin joins me to break that all down. We've got some Yahoo internal data to go over. Who were on the highest percentage of league winning rosters this year? Might be some names that surprise you, and a ton of takeaways on that. Then Ray and I each give five lessons learned from this fantasy season that we're going to take going forward. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Oh boy, it is really a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is my guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, man, it's week 18, Matt. We're having fun. I didn't know what I would do the second time around. I think this is even worse than the first time I intro'd it, but we're here. Week 18, man, it's been a great season, dude. Talking ball with you, engaging with the people, new channel, people ready for the data dump show. I mean, just so much that has happened over the course of these 17, 18 weeks, Matt. And hopefully you brought home some fantasy titles. I hope you brought some home. I hope some of your favorite receivers got it done for you. But as always, we're going to give the people a hell of a show, man. We are going to talk some ball today. I'm excited, man. Always good to be here with you.
No doubt. It's always good to have you here. It's been great to have you here on the weekly Data Dump Show. I've enjoyed it every single week. This is the final data dump of the 2025 NFL season. And because it's week 18, and as Ray said, week 18 is, let's be honest, it's weird. Okay. It's a weird week. It's not really fantasy relevant. If you're playing fantasy in week 18, you're a sicko. We love you for it, but you probably shouldn't be doing it. Nevertheless, we go forward. We still talk about these games here. We're still doing a show. And it's going to take a little bit of a different twist here. We're not necessarily bringing you the stats that you need to know for week 18, because you don't need to know anything for week 18. What you do need to know is two big things here as we're going to be doing on the Data Dump Show. We have a ton of data to go through, but it's Yahoo internal data. We're going to be going over who are the top 25 players on championship rosters over at Yahoo Fantasy this year. Then we go into our typical back and forth format here as we share our 10 lessons that we learned from the 2025 fantasy season. So it's a big show here, Ray. Let's get into this Yahoo internal data, because I love breaking this down every year. I think it's a good table setter for what we learned here in each given fantasy season. If you're watching us on YouTube right now, you can see the entire list here with the percentages, which range anywhere from Bijan Robinson all the way at number one on 27.4% of fantasy championship rosters. He's the number one most rostered player on fantasy championship teams, all the way down to, yes, we got a sandwich of Falcons here, all the way to Kyle Pitts at number 25, 16.5%. on championship roster. So I'm going to just, for the audio listeners, I'm not going to read all the percentages, because that's just a horrible product here. If you want to see the list, I'm sure our social channels are putting it out. I'm sure that you can go on YouTube and check it out. I'm just going to read off the names 1 through 25, and maybe we'll take it section by section here. So number one, as I mentioned, Bijan Robinson. Then we've got Christian McCaffrey, Puka Nacua, Harold Fannin Jr., Michael Wilson, Chase Brown, Chris Olave, Derrick Henry, Brock Purdy, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Brenton Strange, Jonathan Taylor, George Pickens, Drake May, Jacoby Brissett, Matthew Stafford, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Juwan Johnson, Devon Achane, Trey McBride, Kenneth Gainwell, Rico Dowdle, Mike Evans, Kyle Pitts. Ray, that's your top 25 here. Just off the rip, what is your reaction to, I'll give you the floor here, anything you want to take away from the top end of this list, anything in between?
Yeah, the first initial reaction was I was going to stop you once you got to 12, right? Because for most people out there, you know, 10 or 12 team leagues, that's your first round, right? Your first 12 picks. So just, I know it's not ADP, but just looking at the players, top 12 here on this list versus where they were going in drafts, you got Bijan Robinson, Christian McCaffrey, Puka Nacua. Those three guys were first round picks. So it makes sense that if you had those guys, your team was probably set up to be pretty good as long as you didn't fumble mm-hmm. the bag elsewhere. But as you look at the rest of these names, I mean, from Harold Fannin, Michael Wilson, people were very bearish on Derrick Henry this year. quarterbacks we'll talk about a little later, so I want to save some of that. You're going down this list here, and there aren't a lot of those guys that you expect to be here, right? There's no Ja'Marr Chase on the list. There's no Jahmyr Gibbs. We know what he did down the stretch. I think when you see this, it just shows how, I don't even want to say volatile, but every season is different, man. You know, I was just talking to my Discord community about this. We go into these seasons thinking one thing, and, you know, history is shown us this, but then you look at examples. Philadelphia has the same exact squad, same team as they had last year, right? But look how drastically different the outcomes are there. Like, every season is so different. And I think the teams that do best in fantasy are the ones that you're flexible. You can recognize some of these trends and changes, take some bets on some of these players, pick them up off of waivers, start them. And it's really cool to see. It just shows the parity. Every year, you got a couple of handful of locked and loaded studs, and then after that, you're hoping, you know, you fired on a Pickens later. You took the bet on a Trevor Lawrence or a Chris Olave. So it's really cool to see the parity here on the screen.
Yeah, it's a wide ranging list. I think there's names you would expect. I think there's names that you wouldn't expect necessarily, right? Like Joe Burrow stood out to me at 20%. Obviously he had some big games towards the end of the season, but he missed a large chunk of it. It's a reminder that you can definitely make do at quarterback, right? I know we're going to talk about that later in one of the lessons learned. The depth of that position certainly revealed itself for a wide variety of weeks here in this season. The other thing I would say, kind of looking at it too, I thought you made a really good point about, you know, just you can get one of those locked in studs and feel really good about in round one, you know, Bijan, McCaffrey, Puka Nacua, of course. However, the number one player here is Bijan Robinson at 27.4%. That's not that high, you know? I mean, I think this is often, I'm curious your thoughts on this, because this is a talking point definitely in the wider fantasy community, and I do think that there's some merit to it as a concept, as an idea, that it's like, oh, all that really matters is a small handful of players every single year, and like, if you draft those small handful of players, you win your league, essentially. I just think statistically that's not true, because again, if we had one of those players, wouldn't the number be a lot higher than 27%, 28% on these championship rosters? I think you can just as easily, and by the way, like, certainly some of those, I mean, maybe the number of playoff teams is a lot higher for some of these guys, but in terms of actually winning your league, yeah, you can screw up a team with Bijan Robinson. You can also get a team with one of the bad first round picks and still win it if you're able to acquire some of these waiver wire heroes, you know, and build a solid depth of a team. I don't know. That's kind of the way I view things. What's your thoughts on that idea?
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. Here's the thing. I think you could agree with this. Having Bijan Robinson or Christian McCaffrey or Puka Nacua, that should give you a little bit of a head start, right? That should put at least that position and the scoring relative to other players, that should give you an advantage, right? In theory. And maybe that is 100% factually true, but you still have to hit on 7-8 other positions, Matt. It's not just you have Bijan Robinson. I've seen many of Bijan Robinson teams and Christian McCaffrey teams that didn't make the playoffs, right? In some dynasty leagues that did not win the championship. And I think that is where the ability to navigate quarterback, tight end, receiver, running back, whatever that is, it's paramount. You've got to get lucky at the end. You've got to get the right breaks. There's a lot more than just if you have one of those studs, you're 100% locked in, gonna win it, should be favored. Nah, you gotta nail everything else too around it and have some things break your way.
Another takeaway that I thought was really interesting, last year when we did this same breakdown, we had 9 rookies in the top 25. This year, there is only one, and it's Harold Fannin Jr. at the tight end for the Cleveland Browns. Third round selection of the Cleveland Browns, Harold Fannin Jr. on 23%. Of fantasy championship rosters. That's our only rookie. I bet if I gave you, maybe not you, Ray Garvin, because you're a smart guy, but the entire, honestly myself, the entire fantasy community, I bet if I had given you a number, you wouldn't have come up with one. Typically, because what we say is, hey, at the end of the season, rookies are what win you your league, rookies are, they take off late in the year. And we saw some examples of guys that had big finishes to the end of the season, but we also saw guys who the production was much more spread out, guys who never really broke out. So number one, just general reaction to that. And number two, Ray, do you think that tells us anything? I don't think it should tell us anything about rookies as an idea, but do you think it tells us something about this rookie class that we didn't get one of those late round league winner types? Like, do you think this is a class that maybe doesn't have that type of ceiling? Any thought on that idea?
I really think the conversation, Matt, and you'll appreciate this, and I'll try not to go too deep. I don't think it's just that. I think really what it is, put it this way, Ashton Jeanty got all the volume. He got the volume of a league winner, right? When you're talking about 90% of the touch load. Omarion Hampton, another first round pick at the running back position in the NFL draft. It was just him. Kamani Vidal was out in week 17. It was only Omarion Hampton. I know McMillan was a little bit under the weather for Carolina, but the point is that some of these rookies absolutely got the volume. I think the bigger thing, Matt, is situations matter, dude, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like these offensive environments, and when I say environment, it's not just the quarterback, the offensive line, the play caller, the defense on the other side of the ball. I think the ability to identify which environments are going to bear fruit and which ones aren't earlier, like that's kind of like the new edge, right? There's no one's gaining anything by me saying Jeanty's going to get the ball a whole bunch. He does. And he did all year. So not seeing some of these rookies on this list in this season, and then now that we have the information, right, because we know what's happened, you kind of look, and I'm asking you, Matt, like, where were they going to come from? They weren't coming. It wasn't going to be Green Bay with Matthew Golden. It was supposed to come from Las Vegas with Jeanty. It was supposed to come from Los Angeles with Omarion Hampton, but he's hurt. The offensive line is banged up. When you look at the class with the information we have, I'm like, where was it supposed to come from this rookie class? So I think maybe some of that's on the class. I think a lot of it, the ones that we were counting on, those environments and situations just were not good. They weren't good.
Yeah, we do this all the time. It's like, oh, well, talent will win out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, you know? And certainly there are not a lot of NFL players who can outproduce a bad environment. I mean, the worst pick you could have made this year in the first round was Justin Jefferson. And do we think that Justin Jefferson just suddenly forgot how to play football? I certainly don't. You know, this is one of the most productive receivers we've ever seen enter the league in his first few seasons. And again, he was wide receiver like deep in the 30s in terms of points per game. I think I said this to Boone yesterday. He was sandwiched between Parker Washington and Troy Franklin in terms of points per game was Justin Jefferson. So it's just like that is what its situation certainly does dictate production. You try to pretend it doesn't. It does. Same with who else is on your depth chart. And, you know, that's just the way it was with rookies this year. I mean, look at those like two Texans wide receivers this season. It's like, oh, well, at some point in the course of the year, they're just going to emerge over the veterans. And like they had their moments. Both those guys had huge plays in week 17 against the Chargers defense, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, but they didn't ever really take those jobs. I mean, Higgins got more playing time. Noel had flashes, but they were never full field kind of every down type of guys. And sometimes that just never happens. Sometimes it happens because of injuries, right? Like Luther Burden took advantage of a big opportunity in week 17, but a lot of things had to break right for him to have that opportunity. And then at running back, I mean, Trevion Henderson was supposed to be that guy that just ticked up throughout the course of the season. Ramondre Stevenson won people fantasy leagues in week 17, not Trevion Henderson. So yeah, I'm still kind of working that out in terms of, do I think it says things about the players, or do I think it's more of like a macro take with rookies in general? I do kind of wonder, Ray, if this is a little bit of a good, not great class at the wide receiver position. I think it's a good group with a lot of depth. I'll continue to kind of unpack those thoughts. At running back, I do think we kind of had some bad luck with some of the guys at the top, you know, bad situations, things as you mentioned. So that I don't know. I don't know. Again, these are thoughts I'm kind of trying to work out here. I don't have a strong take.
No, I here's the thing. Objectively speaking, I do not think this was a great wide receiver class in 2025. McMillan was pretty much the consensus wide receiver one for most all people, okay? But then after that, you had, again, in hindsight, a college corner receiver kind of in that one role. Mm-hmm. Then you had Emeka Igbuka, who got drafted a little later into a situation that nobody projected him to be the lead guy off the rip. Matthew Golden, people weren't sold on that one. When you look at the caliber of prospect that we got the year prior in 2024, and then I know you haven't gotten into it yet, but once you start to get into this next class, you'll quickly say, oh man, this group in 26 and this group in 24, that was just objectively better than the prospects that we had coming in. The running back position is where I think, Matt, and JJ Zacharyson tweeted some stuff out today with different positional groups versus, you know, where they finished versus what you paid. And I'm looking at the running back list, and it was just every rookie running back. You know, Genty was on there, Hampton was on there, like in the red. And
yeah,
I just think that there are changes in the NFL where you're going to have offenses with dual backs. You're going to have some of those situations where Travion Anderson had 19 carries in week 17, 19 of them. He got fed the ball, but Ramondre was still involved. Absolutely a league type winner for you down the stretch. So it's probably a combination of both, Harmon. The caliber of rookie may not have been as good. Here it is right here. I look at the bottom of this list. You got Caleb Johnson on there. Jeez, you know, people Caleb thinking Johnson. That he was. Yeah, but then look at the top of the list. Look at everybody in green, right? It's Javonte Williams, Kenneth Gainwell, Travis Etienne, who was supposed to be replaced, right? Mm-hmm. Devon Achane. Remember all the talk, as good as Achane was, you remember the talk about Miami? Oh, Ollie Gordon's going to be the goal line back. You know, he's going to come in and take goal line work. It's once you get through this thing, man, it's to be Puka Nacua, to be Ezekiel Elliott, to do that stuff, Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson out the gate, that's just a very, very difficult ask of a first-year player. In just about every one of those situations, like something broke right for that player. Like something happened to allow them the opportunity to go do it. And then the skill set was just, it was of the level that they could continue it. But this chasing this thing, every year we do it all the damn time. Here it is for the receivers. Gold is all year two. And Golden, Thornton, McConkey, Worthy, Thomas. It's, you know, at some point we're going to learn. At some point we're going to learn, Matt. There's a lesson here because here's the thing. We play a proxy for a game. None of us play fantasy football. You don't turn on a game and control an outcome, right? We are participating in a proxy for a game that is played. So the way that we score points and think about the position, like, it's influenced directly by the trends that are happening in the league. It doesn't just magically happen and points occur. They happen because the Rams are running 13 personnel. The Colts are using this type of scheme with Daniel Jones. So I think just paying attention to the trends of the league and the teams and the different situations, it is important for us in fantasy football.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll unpack a lot of that throughout this show, like some of the more interesting new trends and the way the league is going, and try to kind of unpack that. It's like I said, sometimes I don't know if it's just bad luck for certain players, like with the year two wide receivers not having the year that many, myself included, thought they would. You know, again, I say this a lot. We're not going to get a 1,000-yard receiver out of that group. Ladd McConkey leads the group in receiving yards this season, and he's under 900 on the year. Not going to get 1,000. It's crazy. It was so unexpected. And you go through the list. It's like, well, this guy got hurt. This guy had this. This guy had that. So you almost don't want to over-index on the big trends and just also focus on, hey, there's a lot of variance in this game. But I do think your point about some of these rookies coming in, I think that's something to pay attention to more and more, because I guarantee it's going to happen during draft season this year. And maybe it'll be the correct thing to do. Like, we're excited about rookies. And maybe those rookies will be great. And maybe they'll just be okay. Like, a lot of these rookies this year, I don't think were bad. I don't think Tedrick McMillan was bad. He's just okay. A lot of the rookies were just okay this year, other than Harold Fannin, who, according to his win percentage here, was pretty awesome.
Matt, let me ask you, let me give you a direct, let's talk about a direct rookie in particular, okay? Somebody that we both like and will be drafted high next year. Luther Burden. Okay. Luther Burden went off in week 17, right? When all the chips were on the line, he went off. Had he not done that, Matt, if he was 4 for 67, would that have changed the feeling that you had about him going into next year? I would venture to say no. I think you would be encouraged and enthused by what he did, despite the fact that he blew up. So when you look at what happened in week 17, right, I'm glad it happened, but I'm not going to let that make me overreact to some other things that broke right for Luther Burden, right? No Rome Odunze on the field. He will have Colston Loveland out there. So it's not to poo-poo on how good he was, but if he had just finished out with another 6 for 75, I would be just as excited about him going in to his second season with Chicago. But because he had the big blow-up game, you will see. I'm seeing people right now, top five in Dynasty.
Yep.
It's all because of what he did when it mattered the most. So enjoy it, bask in it. But when it comes to making like decisions next year, you got to reel that back in a little bit.
It's a great point. I've been tweeting a lot back and forth with my buddy Adam Harstead from Football Guys, and you know, he does great work modeling rookies. We always like to compare our notes to each other, like what does reception perception like that he doesn't, who's somebody in his statistical model that looks really good after year one that maybe I've got some skepticism on. We've been talking about the Luther Burden thing because his point is that when you do it during your rookie season, doesn't matter. Like back half, he really crushed it. This is the Xavier Worthy thing. Oh, in the back half of the year, he really started crushing it. That did not matter. What mattered was the full body of work of Xavier Worthy's rookie season, which was, it was just okay. It was just okay.
Yep.
And now with Luther Burden, the body of his rookie season looks really good, but he's exploding here towards the end, which I think is causing your point here about how people are now trying to one up each other. And this is something like we're talking about lessons learned as a content creator. I am always trying to be, and I'm not great at, but I'm trying to be better and better about, which is to be more disciplined with this. Like the people who listen to this show, people who subscribe to my site, they know I like this player. I don't need to continue to double and triple down on that to try to be like the loudest guy in the room on insert wide receiver here. Because then when it goes wrong, you can really not just look like an idiot, you can also screw the people who are listening and consuming your content. If you're trying to be like, well, yeah, Luther Burden 2 days ago, I thought he would be a great round 5 pick next year, but today I think he's a round 3. You know, it's just like,
right.
And maybe this is not even like a Luther Burden take. I'm excited. I'm bullish about Luther Burden. But yeah, I think that's sort of an interesting thing for people to remember as they're unpacking these late year rookie performances.
100%, Matt. And it's not, this isn't anti Luther Burden at all, but it's
not at all.
That the same way I don't want to overreact to the negative, right? I don't want to overreact to the fact that, you know what we all know? The damn Chargers didn't have an O-line. Both their bookend tackles were out. You know, that absolutely, Matt, impacted Ladd McConkey. It absolutely 100%. Impacted Justin Herbert, all of them, right? So I'm not going to, just like I'm not going to overreact too much to the bad, I don't want to swing the pendulum too far in the direction of the positive either, because again, and I'm only using Burden because he is good and I do like him and I am bullish about him next year. But there are some things that, you know, in order for him to have that, does he do that with Odunze on the field? I don't know, right? I don't know.
People are very certain he will. I don't know though. But
that's the thing. I'm not certain that he will, or I wouldn't be certain that that's a weekly occurrence, right? In an individual week, hell yeah, he's going to have weeks where he's the top guy on the team. But you know who else will have one of them weeks? Colston Loveland will have a few of those as the top guy. I believe Odunze will have a couple of those as the top guy. So it's just tempering. I'm already getting out of it. Tempering and managing those expectations. And we'll talk about what happens when you don't a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, and Bears playoff games are coming up. That's another thing, too. Those are going to be very indicative of what's going to be happening in next year's ADP.
Yeah.
It does not just stop here in week 17, that conversation. My last thing to point out here before we throw it a break, just because, you know, I love ecosystems. I love this type of stuff. There are several teams with multiple players in the top 25 here. We got the 49ers, the Rams. Okay, you'd expect that. We got the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Not the guy you'd expect necessarily, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, but okay. Yeah. Okay. Jags. We'll talk about that later. Bengals, sure, of course. Bengals have a lot of good players. The other two, Saints and Cardinals. I mean, two teams that like no one was really excited about going into the season. Two teams that, well, Cardinals a little bit different, but certainly like the Saints. A lot of like those are not good teams essentially, and yet they brought home some fantasy titles for people, which is just a reminder. And again, we'll unpack this a little bit later. We're going to be careful when we're crossing off certain teams that are just like avoid those teams, because great picks ended up coming out of the Saints and the Cardinals ecosystems.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a great show. I'm excited for the rest of this one, Matt.
Perfect. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk through our data points and the lessons we learned from this fantasy season, pretty much continuing the conversation we just had. We will do that right after this quick break. All right, we are back, and for the very last time this NFL season, welcome to the Week 18 Data Dump.
Yes, science!
My calculations are correct. You're going to see some serious...
As I've said several times here, we're calling it Data Dump because hashtag branding, you know, consistency, all those things. We got some stats along the way here potentially, but we're also, as Ray said, just kind of going off vibes, giving our lessons learned here. So Ray, what is your first lesson learned here from the 2025 fantasy season?
Yeah, I think this is one that you and I will both really enjoy, and hopefully the people enjoy this one as well, because we're going to continue the conversation around wide receivers and pass catchers, particularly receivers and tight ends. And, you know, one of the things that we both do, Matt, is we study this position, right? How receivers win, where they win, you know, what skill set they possess in order to be fantasy relevant. And one of the things that I do is really try to take some of the things that you do and pair them with team usage and how that stuff equates and translates to fantasy points. One of the things that I've seen people make the mistake about with the receiver position is you just, because you like them, right? You like this receiver, they've got a good skill set, boom. I'm drafting them, they're in, right? No, we all do it. We all do it, right? But one of the things I've tried to make a little easier, and I think we all should think about this going in the offseason, is a lot of times we're thinking about player versus player. Mike Evans versus Garrett Wilson. Chris Olave versus Jordan Addison, where what you're really trying to do first and foremost, Matt, is think about what that player in that usage, what does that equate to in their own offense, right? Where does Emeka Egbuka stand? The cards are even. Mike Evans is there. Chris Godwin is there. Jalen McMillan is there. And Emeka Egbuka is there. Where does he rank? And how does he fit into the target priority in his own offense? And how good is that offense? We'll talk about ecosystems and environments later. But the wide receiver one in Tennessee does not mean the same thing as the wide receiver one in Cincinnati. And we know that intuitively, right?
Yeah.
But just because you've got the number at the end of your name, you've got to assess, like, what does that pie look like in this offense, Matt? I might be the wide receiver two in Dallas, right? But this slice of the wide receiver two pie that I'm getting is so much better than that whole Totino's pizza that you're getting over there. You might be getting the whole damn thing, but it's coming out of aisle 16 at your local Walmart. And I'm not hating on you if that's where you get your pizza from, but I like a different type of pie. You know what I'm saying? So I'll take the half over here. I'll take 30% of this pie versus 70% of a bad pie. So really just looking at this position. And I think when you start to look at these offenses that way, you start to realize that, man, there aren't three options that I want from the Raiders, Matt. We spent a lot of damn time earlier in the season talking through Besh, talking through Thornton, talking through Brock Bowers, and it was very clear early, like the answer was like one, and it was Bowers maybe. You know what I mean? And when you think about this, right, we do all of this coming into the season, dude, but really, inside a season, you got like four or five mini seasons. You've got your takes coming in, but you've got the ability to adjust. After 3 or 4 weeks, you're looking like, hey, this ain't going to get better here in this offense, right? Things are trending in the wrong direction. Like, you've got an ability to make a move. So with the pass catchers in particular, I just challenge everybody this offseason, before you slap, this is going to be my wide receiver seven. If you believe Christian Watson is going to be the one in Green Bay, the primary target earner, where does he rank amongst some of the other guys? If you feel like Buka is going to be the three, because Godwin's coming back, and I bet you Mike Evans is back, what do you do with him? Evaluate some of these pass catchers in their slice of the pie in their own offense before you start comparing them to other players in other offenses. Like, it's you got to know what you got at home first before you start comparing elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, I think that makes complete sense. And this is why I really like the work that you do with the Trinity, which is you're trying to really kind of like isolate that usage, right? And to team environment here, because yeah, it's a great point. And people really struggle with this when it's like, well, he's the wide receiver two on his own team. And the George Pickens example was just such a good one this year because he's the wide receiver two. He's the wide receiver two on a team that is going to throw the hell out of the football and has a really, really good proven veteran quarterback. And that's another part of this when you're looking at different teams, like, okay, what is it better to be the wide receiver two for Joe Burrow's team and be T. Higgins, or Dak Prescott's team and be the Dallas Cowboys wide receiver two there? Or is it better to be the number one wide receiver in Arizona, where Marvin Harrison was going higher than George Pickens, where Garrett Wilson was going higher than George Pickens. And Garrett Wilson had his moments this year. So did Marvin Harrison. Those guys got hurt, so maybe it's an unfair comparison. But, you know, you go deeper and deeper down the list of wide receivers, too. One guy that I really missed out on this year was Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley, he's going to be the number one in Tennessee. A clear cut the number one. And he was. But he was the number one wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans.
For the Titans,
and they were unspeakably bad. And Ridley also had flaws in his game as well. That's another thing too. It's like, okay, he's the number one wide receiver, but this is more of like a meta point about wideouts. There are not 32 number one wide receivers in the league. There's not. And there are guys that are on depth charts who are twos who could be ones in different situations. And then there are other guys like Calvin Ridley for the Tennessee Titans, who is the wide receiver one on his team, but he's not a wide receiver one. No. He has never been that guy. His career has obviously been really bizarre. And I think maybe he could have been in a different situation, but that's not the reality that we live in. And I think other times too, you get these crowded wide receiver rooms, Ray, like Indianapolis, where it's like, they have a lot of really good players. They don't have a number one. They have a collection of really good twos. And so then you kind of have to evaluate the team context with that in mind.
And I think that's where it really gets tricky, Matt. It's easy to identify Ja'Marr Chase, right? He's the one. You make the bet on Drake London or Nico Collins. Like, they're already going high. The real decision that fantasy managers struggle with, it's right here. It's in the Pittman, Marvin Harrison, Jordan Addison. It's in that range, right? It's in that Courtland Sutton range. Like, what is better? Is it better to be the 2-3 in Indianapolis or be the one in Cleveland? You talk about a miss for you with Calvin Ridley. That was Jerry Jeudy. For me, I had so much Jerry. He's the one. It doesn't matter who's going to be there. Jerry Judy's going to get fed like the one. Well, he kind of was, but not really. And as you said with Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy had his flaws as well. And then on top of that, you've got a dysfunctional quarterback room. I just never should have been overweight on something like that, right? Like, it's just not a good bet. It's not a good bet when you know it's going to be a cluster at certain spots for certain teams. But you look at that and you say, well, he's the one. Matt, find me somebody, not somebody that liked Harold Fannin. Everybody liked him. There wasn't a soul out there that said Harold Fannin was going to lead them in every receiving category this year. Not one. Not one.
Yeah.
Nobody expected that, right? So it makes the game that we play a little difficult at times, especially in that range. And that is why saying, look at the player in their own offense. Like, what type of offense is this? Is this a good pie? Is it a bad pie? How much of it are they getting in their own spot, Matt? Before I go look at someone else, like, what? I'm only getting 11% target share in this offense. Like, it's probably better, you know, is that enough to overtake the guy that's getting 24% and maybe a little rougher situation? Evaluate the player inside their offense first, then start to compare and rank and prioritize them by your own criteria elsewhere afterwards.
There's a lot of really good threads to pull on in this conversation. Some of them will come up as we go throughout some of these lessons here. But I think this actually really transitions us to my first lesson here. When we're talking about offensive environment, good play callers move the needles maybe more than anything right now. And I almost kind of think good play, and this is maybe, I'm maybe over indexing on this because of some of the supporting casts for some of the elite quarterbacks right now. But there's a part of me that almost thinks, like, when we're looking at fantasy sleepers and stuff like that, like, oh, this guy's got to be great because he's attached to Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. I don't know. It might be more important to be attached to a really good play caller right now than some of these quarterbacks. And I'm thinking three specific examples this year. Jacksonville Jaguars with Liam Cohen, Chicago Bears with Ben Johnson, and I think the New England Patriots with Josh McDaniels. McDaniels probably doesn't get grouped in this enough because he doesn't come from that Shanahan or McVay tree, but I mean, this has been a huge turnaround this year for these three offenses. EPA per play for these three teams in 2024. New England Patriots, 27th. Chicago Bears, 26th. Jacksonville Jaguars, 19th. 2025 ranks in EPA per play for those three teams this year. New England Patriots, first. Chicago Bears, 8th. Jacksonville Jaguars, not as dramatic. It's 17th, but we all know that there was a lot of weirdness going on with that team early on, and they caught fire late in the year when we're talking about guys like Travis Etienne being a great pick. Jacoby Myers, Parker Washington, Brenton Strange was on our league winner list. Trevor Lawrence obviously had some monster weeks towards the end of the season. He ended up being a guy that won people leagues. So to me, I just think being attached to one of these great play callers, and if they're a head coach, even better, because I mean, Ben Johnson ain't going anywhere. Liam Cohen ain't going anywhere. I think Josh McDaniels in New England, for different reasons, also isn't going anywhere, but that's a different conversation. So again, being attached to one of these great play callers, that's where you really find some of these fantasy hits.
100%, man. If there were a metric or a way to incorporate play caller efficiency into fantasy, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it is so critical to have them. And I'm using a small sample size with two teams, but just look at the Bears and the Lions. Look, I know Detroit, they've been banged up front. They probably have had more injuries this year than any team in the NFL, offensively and defensively. But this wasn't the same offense. You knew it. This was not the same offense. The running game creativity is non-existent. It doesn't look anything like when Ben Johnson was there or even what Ben Johnson is getting out of Kyle Manungai and DeAndre Swift. Jared Goff looks different, although you look at the counting stats, I believe he's second in the league in yards, second in the league in touchdowns. But when you're watching it and you feel it in the moment, you can tell this isn't the same. Yes. Matt, play callers matter. They matter, dude. You know who it doesn't matter for? Josh Allen. You know why it doesn't matter? Because when the play break, I'm going to run. Lamar Jackson, It doesn't matter. I'm good enough to where when stuff doesn't work out, if my receivers get inactive, if I don't have receivers, I can go make it happen, right? I'll run around. I'll figure it out, letting Brandon Cooks be the leading receiver. Those are your true, how do I want to call this? Trucks. Maybe Trevor Lawrence and Drake May and Caleb Williams will turn into high-end trucks in the future. But that's Allen, right? Doesn't matter who's, but I'm gonna pull you along. A lot of guys are trailers. So if you have a trailer, you better have a damn good play caller. You know, another one of the quarterbacks that wasn't on there, Brock Purdy, right? I know it's a small sample size, but watching him play, Matt, he finally looks like he understands the offense. He's in command and control. And since coming back from injury after that one game, I mean, he's looked great these last 3 weeks. So I totally agree with you. Play callers move the needle more than anybody in fantasy probably wants to admit.
See, the Purdy example is so good because I think that if you're a Bears fan or you're a Jags fan, you kind of are almost hoping, and I think Drake May has already announced himself as one of these guys. So yeah, it looks separate conversation. But I think if you are a Bears fan, especially a Jags fan too, you're hoping that what you've seen with Purdy this year happens to your guys. Cause I agree with you. I think number one, he looks like he has full mastery of the offense, which is great. I think he's always had been a really good fit in the cookie cutter color inside the lines, Shanahan stuff. This year he is, and I think he's done this before previously, but it looks different this year, especially late in the season. You can clearly see where he is adding elements to the offense. I mean, perfect example was that Kyle Juszczyk touchdown throw on Sunday Night Football, and Kyle Shanahan was asked about it after the game, and and he goes, I'm paraphrasing here, but he essentially explained, he's like, yeah, you know, I saw Juszczyk was open early in the flat for the check down, and I wanted him to take that throw, and then he starts running around, and then I kind of want him to start, then I kind of want him to throw it away. And then I see him scramble around a little bit more, and then he throws this touchdown. And I think he said, I basically become a fan like anyone else that's excited that he made a play. Jimmy Garoppolo and all them boys before were not doing that. And so I think that's what you're kind of hoping. And you've seen flashes, I think, of that with Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence. And you've definitely seen it with Caleb Williams. And Ben Johnson has said it too, where some of the crazy plays that Caleb Williams will make, he goes, yeah, hell of a play call by me, right? And essentially insinuating like, yeah, I had nothing to do with that. He made me look right when the play was wrong. So that's really where, when you get maybe those guys don't become, you know, Josh Allen, right? Where he is truly, everything is on his shoulders. And when he has a bad game, the offense sucks. When he has a great game, it's because he had a great game, not because of anything going on around him in that receiver room. So you're hoping that those guys like Caleb and Trevor can eventually become the Purdy level players, which I think is totally like doable, if not maybe already there. I don't know. We'll see that as the pairing of these guys happen over the years, the play caller, the quarterback, that's where you really get the good stuff. So those are the ecosystems I want to be really invested in going forward. And just last note on this, because you brought these two teams up where we saw the team that lost Ben Johnson and the team that lost Liam Cohen in 2024, the Lions were third in EPA per play. The Bucks were fifth. This year, Lions are 10th, Bucks are 22nd. And I think it's really dramatic there, because at least for Dan Campbell, he was able to take over the play calling and kind of keep the ship afloat because he's an offensive coach. But I mean, they demoted the offensive coordinator. We can all agree that was not a good, not as good as it should have been on offense this year for the Lions. For the Bucks, they go to their third offensive coordinator in 3 years, and you kind of see the results of that. It's just not as good as what it was with Cohen. So definitely a good example there for how much play callers matter. Okay, Ray, let's get to your second point here, your second lesson learned.
Yeah, I'm going to steal JJ again. I'm late round quarterback. I do not think that in today's, again, had this conversation with some people earlier. I get what the bet is with Lamar Jackson, with Josh Allen. When those guys are on, they're capable of doing things that maybe a lot of other players at the position can't do. But then I'm sitting back, Matt, and I'm like, in championship week, Brock Purdy got me five touchdowns. Trevor Lawrence, despite the fact that he threw an interception, he rushed the ball twice for touchdowns. Jackson Dart, two rushing touchdowns. If you had to play Dak Prescott, he got you 300 yards and multiple touchdowns. The cost of acquisition for one of the high-end guys, if that bet does not pay off in that season, it's not worth it. Because, Matt, we should have a stronger, better ability to identify some fruitful situations that people may not like. Nobody was drafting Sam Darnold, Matthew Stafford. I mean, you can go down the list and look at some, and it may not happen right away, but there'll be a point in time, and damn it, I was going to write about Tyler Shuck probably 5 weeks ago. But at that time, he hadn't quite broken out. And so I was like, no. But you could have thrown him out there the last month of the season if you had the stones and been totally fine. Totally fine with Tyler Shuck. I don't know if it is worth the cost of acquisition at that position, given the fact that on average, I believe it's around 58 quarterbacks start NFL seasons every year. Every year. They get hurt all the time. They're influenced and factored by the O-line. I'm not saying I don't want Josh Allen, Matt. I'm not saying I don't want Lamar or Jaden Daniels. But in today's game, You can really late round stream that position. And if you hit on your other stuff, you should be stacked everywhere else to where you can assume some of that volatility. Because you know what? There were a couple of dud weeks from Josh Allen in your starter spot. It wasn't like he was smashing week in and week out. So I think for me, and I'm not saying this is going to, the NFL has changed and this is going to be the trend and the projection for the next 10 years of fantasy football. But going into next year, 2027, I'm not paying for no damn quarterback. It's not. Caleb Williams, you could have gotten him cheap. Brock Purdy, cheap. Stafford. I'm not doing it, Matt. I'm not doing it.
I do think there, you're right. Maybe this is more of an individual take and everything like that, but I do think there are two kind of bigger picture league wide takes that might influence why this can, you know, because like JJ's whole theory was at one point, obviously it was all late round quarterback because quarterback ADP was really, especially after like the 2011 lockout season, stuff like that was so overinflated because we were seeing these huge passing numbers, but we were kind of seeing it everywhere. It was easily replaceable. You didn't have to spend, and ADP was so crazy with the early round quarterbacks. That was the late round quarterback theory. But then once guys like Lamar and like Josh Allen and all those guys, they started to really differentiate themselves. Then I know JJ, you know, personally like backed off a little bit on that stuff. Yeah. And you started to take more of the early round guys. I do wonder if maybe we're seeing a shift back into more late round quarterback stuff, because my two thoughts on this, and again, these are just pet theories I'm kind of working fly here. One, it goes back to the play caller thing. I think these play callers are so good right now that they can take the Trevor Lawrence and make him freaking QB4. Drake May is a great prospect. He's quarterback 2 in overall points this year. Again, Josh McDaniels is a big part of that too. I also think that the, and again, just to make the point there, Drake May QB2, Trevor Lawrence QB4, Caleb Williams QB6. And none of the, Caleb Williams maybe went the earliest of those guys, right? It's not super high either. And again, those are all the great play callers. And also, you think about the functional athleticism of those players. I just think quarterbacks now, I mean, Purdy is so, he's so dangerous as a scrambler. He was the last pick in the draft. I think because the mobility floor is just going up for these guys, that provides a big time edge too, because you get those crazy passing efficiency seasons from these really good play callers attached to solid quarterbacks. And also you can add on the rushing juice as well. It might make the late round quarterback thing a little bit better. One piece of Yahoo internal data to share here. We mentioned the name Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels was on the most last place teams this year. 26.5% of last place teams had Jaden Daniels. And I will just say personally, my worst fantasy team this year was the Kings Classic redraft, not the snake draft team, not the salary cap one. That actually turned out pretty good. I made it to the semifinals. But I drafted Jaden Daniels in the third round that year, and it was just a pain in the ass to try to fill the rest of the spots. And that's a very deep league, so it's a little bit weird. But I drafted Jaden Daniels there, and you're just like, okay, well, if Jaden Daniels got hurt, I can replace him somewhere else. But it's the opportunity cost, again, to give up some of those early round players in other positions. That was just putting me behind the eight ball, because I was like, I swear this team is good. Especially early. Like, I swear this team is good. Tucker Kraft was on that team. Obviously, injuries. Tucker Kraft, Chris Olave, Mecca Ibuka was on that team early on. Drake London was on that team. Nico Collins was on that team. It's like, why is this team not good? And it's just because I'm working behind the eight ball trying to fill that quarterback spot that I took very early.
Yeah, and I get why you do it, right? You took Jaden Daniels early because if he hits and he plays like Jaden Daniels, you're getting an elite efficiency level thrower that's going to give you 600-800 yards plus on the ground. And that Kunami code, that ability to run, it absolutely masks for whatever deficiencies are around. But again, when you think about if they don't give you that special season, right, that special Lamar, Josh Allen game-breaking season, man, the difference between 23 points per game and 21 points per game ain't much. The difference between taking the quarterback in round 4 versus round 10 is big in terms of what you can fill your roster with. So I just think that our ability to identify some of these offenses that could be fruitful and the cost, and we're probably going to see some, and you're going to have to be okay with having Bo Nix, right? You may not like him. You may not be the biggest fan of Sam Darnold or whomever it is. I'm not telling you it feels good. But if you've got the stones to be like, you know what, I got a quarterback here, there's a Tyler Shuck down there, and then I'm going to stream and figure it out, Jacoby Brissett, waivers. Marcus Mariota, waivers. Jackson Dart in Yahoo Leagues prior to the breakout, waivers. You can get these guys off of waivers. I'm not spending big money on quarterback, at least in 2027. I'm not going to do it, Matt.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, and I've been an early round quarterback drafter each of the last 3 years. The previous two seasons, it went really well. This year, just didn't go so well in certain spots. Okay, I'm going to get to my second data point here. And this is year 3 to 4 wide receiver breakthroughs are alive and well. I am differentiating here between breakouts and breakthroughs. Because people, hey, breakout, this guy already broke out. Yeah. I'm with you. I got a pretty low threshold for what is and isn't a breakout, but breakthrough seasons here. These are the wide receivers this year who averaged more than 12 points per game. I'm going to read off the names here and see if we can find a little bit of a theme here. Puka Nacua, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Rashee Rice, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, George Pickens, Drake London, Davante Adams, Chris Olave, Nico Collins, CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown, Malik Nabers. 6 of those 13 players are year 3 to 4 wide receivers here. Puka Nacua, JSN, Rashee Rice, George Pickens, Chris Olave, Drake London, and yeah, so those are the guys here. And I almost kind of want to include Nico Collins here. It's cheating, but he had a big breakthrough year 3, year 4 season, right? So he's probably yes. part of this lesson as well. If you go back to his 2023 and 2024 season. And I just think that, number one, this is instructive on multiple reasons here. These are some of the best receivers in football right now, are guys that are in their 3rd and 4th seasons. We've gotten so greedy with early production from rookies and second-year receivers, too, lately. That has been a trend of late. It's like, oh, second-year receivers, that's what you need. The second-year receivers, as we talked about earlier, were not helpful this year. But that doesn't mean that they can't be helpful in year 3 or 4. People had definitely typecasted Drake London before he had his big year last season. People had definitely typecasted Chris Olave prior to this year.
Yep.
And George Pickens. I mean, and even Jaxon Smith-Njigba was the guy that's like, well, he's yep. a good player, but is he one of the best receivers in football? You bet he is. And I think that there could be guys from that year 2 group who have that year 3, and guys in year 4 as well could maybe take that next step too. So receiver is just it's an interesting position right now because there are so many good receivers. It's going to come up later in the show as well. So when we're trying to find those big breakthrough players, guys who are in their primes and are featured in good offenses too, JSN being in a new role in Clint Kubiak's offense certainly helped him exceed expectations. Chris Olave being in a different role in Kellen Moore's offense absolutely helped him exceed expectations. Same thing with Drake London in year 3. Same thing with Nico Collins when there was a new play caller there. Bobby Slowick featured him as that X receiver. It just really makes a big, big difference when we're talking about these breakthrough seasons in year 3, year 4 when these guys are starting to enter their prime seasons.
Yeah, and you've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba up on the screen now. He was being drafted after Marvin Harrison Jr. coming into this year, after Marv. Like, there were people out there that were still very skeptical on Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but then you look, right, new offensive situation. What did they do during the season? They cleared out a wide receiver. They really didn't add anybody. Like, they brought in an old, aging Cooper Kupp. Like, all the circumstances were there. And this was a productive player. No DK Metcalf here. You look at some of these guys. It takes a minute, man. If you've ever, and Matt, I know you have, right? So I'm sort of just putting it out there for the audience. But talking to these guys, it is not like Madden. You don't just turn the game on and up. Oh, I was great in college, and right away I was great. Those type of players, the Randy Mosses, the Ja'Marr, they're rare. That's why Justin Jefferson. He's one of the best to ever play through the first few years of his career, right? Ja'Marr Chase is on that trajectory. That's not everybody. Sometimes it takes some time. There's different offense. If you got quarterback, once those things come together, you know what tracks is the usage. Like, the usage was there for Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but he needed some other stuff to break his way, right? George Pickens, for what he did for the Dallas Cowboys, usage-wise, it was roughly around this. Everything production-wise was better, but usage-wise, it tracks on what he typically did for Pittsburgh. The change was the situation. He's in a much better place that throws the ball more, but his slice of the pie has been relatively the same when Lamb was on the field with him, right? So when you're looking at some of these year 3, year 4 guys going into next season, I'm not discounting. I don't think Ladd forgot how to play football. I don't think Ladd McConkey suddenly got worse at playing receiver. You know what I think? Their offensive line is a mess. And the same damn thing we talked about on Data Dump, Matt. The only time Justin Herbert wasn't sacked in a game was against my Dallas Cowboys. He went right back out there the following week, and they gave up 5 or 6 sacks against the next opponent they played. So when they fixed that, yeah, it'd give him more time to get the ball out. You and I talked about it on here. What do they want to do? They talked about it on the broadcast, and I was going to text you, Matt. Man, another seven-step drop for Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
You know, just done that. The O-line be damned. We're going 5 to 7-step drops. So, yes, when he gets some offensive line play, I expect Ladd to play better. When Odunze is healthy, yes, I expect him to be a viable part of the Chicago Bears offense. So, no, I'm not giving up on any of those year three guys. Look at Quentin Johnston this year. Look how good QJ was this season. That's another guy. Alec Pierce, what was this, his third, fourth season? Like, these are guys that are probably going to be around here in fantasy. Does that mean QJ is going to be an elite all-pro level? No, but I'll say this. At worst, I call these guys, Matt, these receivers, the Quentin Johnsons of the world, they're gnats, right? They're gnats around the main thing. And if he's there, he's always going to be a gnat. There'll be a week where he outscores Ladd or two or gets the big play. You would like for him to go on, but the Chargers felt like we want him there. That, like, these guys are gnats. But overall, year three, year four guys, I agree. Breakthroughs are alive. And when you get so many different offensive coordinator changes and you get fresh players in there, fresh offensive minds, you should see some more of this.
Yep. I mean, and you're right. The list goes on. If you get deeper down the position too, Wandale Robinson took a big leap
in
year four. Alec Pierce, yes. You mentioned Quentin Johnston, like these guys. Yeah, it's just we write these guys off too early as this is who they will always be. Shoot, Christian Watson, I know he's in year five, but he's had such a weird injury ridden career. He made a huge leap this season coming off a torn ACL. So we're just a little too quick to label this receiver is what he is, when I think it is much, much deeper conversation than that. So, yeah, that's really good. We're going to come back to the receiver conversation, some of the depth of the position in one of my later points. But for now, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to run through our lessons learned. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk through our lessons learned from the 2025 fantasy football season. Ray, give me your third lesson learned from this year.
Harmon, okay. I need you to tell me I'm overreacting. I need you to tell me I'm overreacting because most of us, we can make trades, right? We can make some trades during our fantasy season. Matt, I think the next time a rookie goes GameStop, I mean, nuclear-type value. I'm out, Matt. I am out. I feel like what happened with Emeka Igbuka is a learn. I don't think it was just coincidence. I don't think it was just all bad Baker. The environment was bad. He wasn't doing good. But his ascension, if we really wind it back, like it was due to the fact that Evans and Godwin were not there, as well as Jalen McMillan, right? Like, none of those guys. Evans was there early for a little bit, then gone. Godwin came back and then broke his ankle again and was gone. And during that time period, like, he really did get an opportunity to assert himself, and he was awesome. But the moment that those guys started to come back, right, it seemed like it shifted back towards, like, this is what the offense was supposed to be. You're a great part. You filled in, but you're not the primary here. When I'm thinking about how these rookies, Travis Hunter, he reached that high value before we even saw it. Everybody was excited for week eight. Like, is it wrong to if you draft a rookie and the environment, people were trading anything they could for Emeka Igbuka. You could have gotten damn near whatever receiver you wanted, Matt. You want Nico Collins? You want Amon-Ra St. Brown? At the height of Igbuka's hysteria, I mean, he was damn near unattainable. If I get another situation like that, I feel like if there's somebody in my league that's saying, you know what, Ray, I'll give you Nico and this. You just give me back Igbuka and one little old piece to keep me going. If I can turn one of those unproven rookies early in the season into something more stable, more proven veteran production, I think I'm doing it. I think a lot of people were burned by this one this year. A lot of people. And I hate the fact that he is the poster child for this because I think he's a really good receiver. I mean, his first round pick, I had him as one of the top guys in the draft. I love him. But there is a lesson to be learned in this. Tyler Warren, another one at the tight end position. I mean, people were saying he's better than Bowers, right? Better than McBride. Mm. Give me Tyler Warren and what he's doing. And you could have moved him for Fannin and some other stuff at a point in time. So I'm just saying, I think that, and I'm not talking dynasty and hell, maybe even more so dynasty, but even in seasonal leagues, if I get a rookie that goes GameStop, not gets a little value, goes nuclear, and I can cash out for proven veteran value in production, I think I'm taking it, Matt.
Yeah, I think the important thing is here, and with the Ibuka example in particular, I think it's important. NFL film matters more, to me at least. I don't know if you disagree, but to me, NFL film matters more. When we see guys playing the NFL, it's like, okay, well, this matters more to me than what they were as a prospect, because it's more equal competition, you know, more professional systems, the whole deal. That being said, I think it's still early on in the rookie season, okay, to take in the data from the prospect profile as well. And for Ibuka, you know, in terms of his like charting data, it's a great point here from Frank. Like, as you said, it's kind of wild how Ibuka and Tyler Warren started as these huge hits and turned into misses by the end of the season. And some of it is due to factors outside of both of their control. Quarterbacks either injured or not playing well. We know the whole deal. But it comes back to two things again. For the Ibuka example, like his charting data for reception perception in the middle of the season in the in-season rookie report, like it was good, but it wasn't. You know, I probably overreacted to what he was doing. And the charting data looks more like a guy that, you know, is a good, solid number two receiver. Isn't necessarily one of the best receivers in the NFL, because sometimes you're doing this, like progression's not linear. Sometimes you're going to dip a little bit. And there's going to be some of those struggles. And when you look back to his prospect profile, he was a guy that I evaluated as a really, really good number two receiver. But he comes out and produces like a number one and is kind of deployed it like a number one at the beginning of the season. And the offense is good. That sort of pushes you to change the opinion of the prospect profile. But then as the season goes on, you're kind of remembering that prospect profile and you're thinking, okay, yeah, he's sort of settling back into being part of a big wide receiver room. Maybe he does have the year two leap or the year three leap, right, where he becomes that guy. I think he's a really good player, but I do think that the GameStop stock is a great way to say this. He's not going to suddenly be Malik Nabers or one of those guys that was more of that type of prospect.
Right. And I know that the initial pushback would be, well, then you would have missed out on Nabers. Again, I use these two as examples because I think they're situations, right? Ibuka didn't just get dropped into Tampa Bay, and from day one, he was 100% better than Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Jalen McMillan. I love Ibuka. I was my underdog exposure shows how much Jalen McMillan. I thought even with Ibuka, they're probably not going to take McMillan off of the field. Tyler Warren, you talked about it with Indianapolis. This was a team that still didn't throw the ball a lot. A bunch of wide receiver twos. So the volume, neither of those guys got Malik Nabers level of volume. If he was just getting 30%, I'm not going to buck that. But again, when you get these rookies that aren't truly, truly earning it, right? And then the stock goes game stock. It goes nuclear, Matt, where you've got an asset where even in a seasonal league, you could have moved Ibuka for damn near anybody you wanted. If that position or that situation presents itself for me this year, I will explore it. I will. I'm not saying 100% of the time I'm doing it, but I'm damn sure listening a lot more this year, next year, than I would have this year with a player like that in a situation like that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And both these guys playing very crowded offenses, and that's just a part of it too. No, very few players are immune to the crowded offense. You can be as good as you want, but you've got to be like one of the six best receivers in football to just command absolutely everything. Even Nico Collins, who I think is a top five wide receiver in the NFL, he sometimes had his volume sort of hit or miss based on the guys around him. So, yeah, again, I think that is a good point here for this one. And that sort of kind of continues into my next point, actually, which is, for me, I'm trying to not overrate the small rotational slot receivers as I have in times past. And number one, I think it kind of is a consistent conversation to the one that we're having here, where we've mentioned so many good wide receivers on this show, bro. Like, dude, there's so many good receivers in the league. There's so many crowded rooms right now. And I think at some point there's going to be some fallout there. Like, and by the way, this is a Josh Downs point. And you know, I'm definitely capitulating on Josh Downs. I was really high on him going into this year from a talent perspective. I kind of backed off on him as a fantasy pick later in the summer, but not for the right reasons necessarily. I did think it was going to be too crowded, but I also thought the quarterback play would be very mid. The quarterback play was really good to start the season, and Downs still wasn't doing it because of how crowded it was, because Alec Pierce was good. Michael Pittman was healthy. They drafted Tyler Warren. So I had him ranked as like wide receiver 46 or something like that, which wasn't like, oh my God, take this guy. But he still was worse than wide receiver 46. And a big part of that is because he's rotating on and off the field. And I think in today's league where teams are a little bit more run heavy, they are using these rotational pieces at wide receiver because the depth of the position is so good. I mean, Indianapolis should want to get Alec Pierce as much opportunity. They should want to get Michael Pittman that opportunity. Teams that have a lot of Green Bay, they've got a lot of guys they rotate. That's because they've got a lot of good wide receivers. So I think because of that, the guys that are becoming less and less important are the ones that were taken off the field on running downs, are the guys that aren't playing in two receiver sets. And this isn't a new idea, but it's one that I'm definitely putting more and more importance on when we're looking at receiver archetypes. The guys that are going to matter the most are the ones that are on the field all the damn time. And for guys like Josh Downs, I think Downs is an awesome player. I take back 0% of what I've said about him as a talent. But from a fantasy football perspective, that's where, back to your point at the beginning, we can be like, I love this guy as a player, I'm going to draft him in fantasy. Well, you got to just be careful of what the cost is when we're talking about those guys.
I agree with you. And the player that I'm going to name, the cost wasn't as much as Downs. Not that Downs was super expensive, but he was a rotational slot guy that absolutely did not. He didn't matter much at all. I think he got one really good week. Pop Douglas. Remember that? I mean, the slot receiver in New England, and he's playing in one of the most efficient offenses in the NFL with the league MVP. He's not on the field, right? And then he's a piece that they can rotate, right? We could put somebody else in at this slot receiver. We're actually going to kick Diggs over there and put Kyle Williams on the outside. So I'm with you. He's not the only one. There are a couple of other of those. There it is. Look at the numbers. 29, 418, three touchdowns. Downs had four. He had three. You're right. If you're not on the field, Malik Washington, remember the hype for him down the stretch, even when Tyree got hurt? Go get Malik Washington. He plays in the slot. You need to be on the field. you need to be on the field more often than not at the wide receiver position. Maybe tight end, you can sell me on something with a great situation, but I'm with you. Those small slot wide receivers, you're not feeling confident at all. Start Marvin Mims, none of those guys.
No, and by the way, those guys were pretty good for the teams like DeMario Douglas for the New England Patriots. He gave him a lot of good work. I mean, for a guy like Josh Downs, he had a couple of moments for this team, but it's just the old, like, just traditional counting stats were not there. I mean, a guy like Wandale Robinson, who we talked about earlier, he's playing a lot more outside this year. Now, and that's not a very crowded room, right? Like, that's a wide open receiving room, so that's obviously going to be different than playing for the Colts or the Patriots, where it's more crowded. But yeah, Wandale's playing a lot more outside this year, and that has really helped him move beyond the old, like, PPR scam archetype. So that's just something that I'm putting more importance on, and I hope my followers at Reception Perception will appreciate that. All right, let's get to your fourth lesson learned from this season.
All right, so this one, Matt, is near and dear to me because we do it all the time. The moment a rookie gets drafted, veterans are dead, right? I remember Travis Etienne, he wasn't supposed to be anything this year. Ramondre Stevenson was nuked once the New England Patriots drafted Travion Henderson. Remember Trey Benson, supposed to take over for James Conner. As soon as James Conner got hurt, Cardinals season was over. Like, don't bury the veterans once a rookie gets drafted. R.J. Harvey was supposed to come in and be Alvin Kamara right out the gate. It was all J.K. Dobbins, right? Until J.K. Dobbins got hurt. And here's a newsflash for you, Matt, and everybody out there listening. This 2026 running back class, not good. Not good at all. At all. I guarantee you, mark my words, there are going to be a lot of these veteran running backs that get one-year deals, that get lead-back jobs. The pool coming in here in 2026 is not good. You're going to see the Connors. You're going to see the Javantes, the Dobbins. Hell, Najee Harris, if the Achilles is good. Don't forget about Joe Mixon's been chilling at home. I'm telling you right now, do not bury these veterans the moment a rookie gets drafted. Take the value, especially if you're drafting over the summer. I mean, my goodness, Mike Evans, nobody wanted him, right? Push all these old guys down. Don't bury the veterans once the rookie gets drafted, because very rarely is a Basil Tootin going to come in and just park Travis Etienne on the bench. Like, I don't know why we do this stuff every single year, Matt. Soon as the damn running back is drafted, that the veteran is done. James Conner's going to play again if he wants to play ball. J.K. Dobbins as well. That's one of the big lessons that I will continue to preach each and every year.
It's such a trust-based position, and veterans are just more trusted than rookies. It's like period, end of story. And Travis Etienne, I'm with you on this one, because Travis Etienne was one of my best picks this year, like all of my good teams. And I wasn't like, I'm going after Travis Etienne. I was just like, I'm gonna be open-minded to the Jags' ambiguous backfield. And because people were not drafting Travis Etienne proactively, I ended up with a lot of him. So I want to be more open-minded to those type of players going forward, because I agree with you. We always do the shiny new thing at running back, and it doesn't always workout. All right, my fourth one here, it's just avoid high-priced players in projected bad ecosystems. And I went back and looked at it in an episode that Nate Tice and I did over the summer in draft season. So it was essentially looking at, and I put together a whole nerdy spreadsheet. It was a really fun episode. But it was essentially looking at how offenses were projected to finish. It was based on DVOA. It was based on Vegas. It was based on a variety of different sources, and Mike Clay's projections as well, in terms of offenses, like where they were going to project to rank this year versus ADP, like a conglomerate ADP rank, essentially, like guy, how high were these guys going? And the teams with the biggest gap in terms of where their players were going, how high they were in fantasy, and yet they were projected to be lower scoring offenses. I went back and looked at it. These were the teams: the Las Vegas Raiders, the Arizona Cardinals, the Minnesota Vikings, the Seattle Seahawks, the New York Giants, the Miami Dolphins, and the New York Jets. Okay. Raiders. Yeah. I think that aged pretty well. The Cardinals, kind of a hit and miss one, because Trey McBride was great, but Marvin Harrison wasn't, and Michael Wilson was really good. So again, it's the high-priced players. You don't want to just cross these teams off entirely. Minnesota Vikings, yeah, I'd say that aged pretty well as an offense to avoid. Seattle Seahawks, that was one that even at the time, Nate and I were like, I don't know if I buy this one. I actually think this offense is going to be a little bit better than that. Even still, Kenneth Walker was a disappointing pick.
Yeah,
you know, Jackson Smith-Jigba was great, but Kenneth Walker, disappointing. Giants, obviously, that was, you know, Malik Nabers, maybe we're having a different conversation. Miami Dolphins, that one probably didn't go so well because Jalen Waddle was good. Tyreek Hill was solid when he played, and Devon Achane was awesome. But the Jets, like Garrett Wilson was solid when he played. Breece Hall has been disappointing this year in fantasy. So, yeah, it's just, this is a lesson that I'm glad we did that episode, because I've referenced it a couple of times, and I think the results coming out of it show that, I'm not saying full-on avoid these teams, but definitely be cautious when there's multiple players going really high from an offense that's just not projected to be very good.
Yeah. I mean, situation matters, right? Hashtag situation matters. Play callers matter. Ecosystems matter. And then the cost of acquisition. Like, what's the opportunity cost for that bet to pay off? I agree with you. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but you look back and you're like, man, there were some really rough picks that cost a lot. And we had a lot of data to show that offense was probably going to be a work in progress. Let me just say this. The Cardinals thing, I think you were right. I mean, with Kyler, you wanted to avoid everybody. It wasn't until there was a fundamental switch in changing the offense where that got fruitful. But the first 6-7 weeks, it wasn't feeling good for McBride, Marv, or anybody.
Yeah, and the team still stunk too. That's the thing. Even when they went to Jacoby Brissett, ever since they've announced him as the starter, they have won 0 games. So not great there. All right, we're going to take one last quick break. We come back, we wrap it up with our final two lessons learned from this season. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're going to wrap it up here with our final two lessons learned from the 2025 fantasy season. Ray, give me your fifth and final lesson from this year.
Final one, man. As fun as it is to be right in week one, you know when it really matters, like week 16, week 17, right? Don't chase being right in week one as much as following what's happening, paying attention through the season and trying to predict and project to be right weeks 15, weeks 16, and 17. You know who I was right about week one? Matt Harmon, that didn't sniff a lineup in week 16, 17, or 15. Kayshon Booty was dead right about him week one. It felt good week one. And you know we got to get some Kayshon Booty on the show. But yeah, the, like watching that thing play out, you're like, okay, he's the, what do you call him? The sacrificial X that can make some big plays. Yeah. But hell no, he's not going to be in my lineup towards the end. So my big lesson is, no matter how right or wrong you are in week one, there's so much season left. And you're really not right or wrong until you get to week 17. So going into next year, we want to be right to start, but don't chase that. Try to see, take in the information, make adjustments to try to be right come week 16, come week 17. Being right in week one, it may feel good, sound good, but man, that's a long ways ago that Kayshon Booty was in that starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I still come back to our Kayshon Booty debate, which is one of my favorite ones that weirdly like took off on social media and stuff. And I still feel like we were both kind of right about that one because, you know, you were right. Like Kayshon Booty held that role down as the X receiver essentially all season. And yeah. I was right in that he was going to be, he's not bad. It's just in that role, he's going to be up and down as a producer. And that was definitely the way that it played out this year. And yeah, it's a long season, man. Week one lies to you. Week two, the first month of the season lies to you. You know, think about where we were talking about with Trevor Lawrence after the first month of the season. And now he's one of our league winners. So one of the best tweets I saw all offseason was from Jacob Sanderson, who does great work. And he was basically saying like, people attack fantasy in August as if they are trying to, they're like figuring out predetermined outcomes. It's like, okay, well, this shows us that their plan is to do this. When we see these news reports, the teams don't know. The teams know it's right. A long season and things change over the course of the year. That's not to say that guys that were great in September are horrible now or whatever. It's just, it's a moving target and it's a long season, man. That is something, that, a good lesson for that everybody can learn, us included as content creators, because, you know, we're doing daily shows. We're talking about all this stuff. And yeah, we overreact to week one. It happens every single year.
Yeah. So that's my lesson, right? Don't chase being right in week one. Try to take the information in so you're right at the end of the season when it matters, come week 15, 16, 17.
All right, for my final lesson here, fifth and final, I'm going to go full boomer on this one. Running backs are back, baby.
I think
running backs were back last year, actually, and we talked about it a little bit on the show why I was taking more early round running backs this year than in previous seasons. This year, I think it's even tenfold. If you just look at the top scorers in fantasy football right now, the top 15 scorers right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them are running backs when we're comparing it to wide receivers. And it's even some guys that, you know, kind of had, and that's on a per game basis. If you drop it down to 16, it's Travis Etienne adds another one to it. Cam Scadabo adds another one to it at 17. 18 is Chase Brown. 19 is Javonte Williams. If you go to 22, you add DeAndre Swift. And it's just like running backs. They're scoring points right now on a per game basis, just more than wide receivers are right now. I mean, Chris Olave, one of the best wide receiver picks you can make this year. As we said, that year three leap is alive. He scored as many points on a per game basis as DeAndre Swift. And DeAndre Swift went much later. You know, it's just, to me, I think that these running backs and I don't know how much of this I think is stable. Weirdly, running backs have been healthier lately than wide receivers, which I don't know if that's a fluke or not. We could absolutely see next year just a rash of big time running back injuries. I think that's possible. I don't want to over index too much on that. But what I do think is more of like a pet theory of mine, Ray, is that I think wide receiver injury rates are actually on the rise lately. And again, that might just be completely random. However, I do think there's something to the way these guys train that's a deeper conversation. There's one part of it. The second part of it is with the way wide receivers are used now, your number one wide receiver is having to run routes all over the field. You're number one, you're getting gassed pre-snap with all the motion at the snap, stuff like that. You're also seeing guys like Puka Nacua, just an example, Puka Nacua, right? Like you running all those routes over the middle of the field, taking a lot of freaking contact.
Yep.
He's not being used like the X receivers back in the day where you're catching a stop route and running out of bounds. You know, it's just the way wide receivers are used now. Look at Garrett Wilson. he took a lot more punishment this year in the role that he's playing now than he had previously played. And again, I'm not saying this is a trend, but it's one thing I'm thinking about when we're talking about, well, hey, build around wide receivers. That position might be just as fragile now as running backs are, especially because wide receiver is so, so deep. Those targets are a little more spread out as well.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. I do think that there is the deployment of the receivers is definitely opening them up to some different type of hits, especially with the NFL's emphasis on no high hits, right? Getting a lot of receivers hit low, a lot of knee injuries, a lot of stuff like that. I also think, Matt, quarterback play is influencing as well, right? When you just think about the quarterbacks across the league right now, even some in the playoffs, right? Sam Darnold, you're looking at Caleb Williams. These offensive coordinators understand that in order to get the best out of this guy, we got to run the damn football. Like there is, I don't think we're in the era where you're just going to see guys dropping back 40 times a week just because, right? There is no Drew Brees. There is no Tom Brady. There is no Peyton Manning. You've got a lot of system-level quarterbacks operating really good teams. And you know what teams realize? The Jags, the Broncos. If we can just do enough offensively, we got the type of defense that can win us games. Again, remember, we're playing a proxy for a game, Matt. So, yeah, I do think there is something behind the receiver production. You've got more of them on the field. Unless you are one, and I think it really just boils down to the buckets, right? I think there is a small handful of elite caliber receivers that no matter what's going on, Puka, Jamar, CeeDee Lamb, maybe a few others are going to get theirs. On a week-to-week basis, it's them. Outside of that, there's got to be a lot of other stuff go right for them to be that nuclear-type difference maker, especially when you've got a running game. Houston, my last example, they don't have a stud running back at all, but they're going to run that joint 25 times a game. Hell or high water, they're going to commit to running the ball, which just takes away the level of passing volume that's going to be in the offense. I'm with you. Running backs are 100% back.
20 players, not including quarterbacks, scored 14-plus fantasy points per game this year. 13 of them were running backs, 13 out of the 20. So that is the note we're going to end it on here for two big-time wide receiver appreciators in you and I, Ray. We're hyping up the running back. So with that, that is going to do it for today's show. And Ray, that does it for the 2025 Data Dump. Hell of a run, man. Really appreciate you being here every single week.
Man, it's been fun. I appreciate you, Matt. All the people that tapped into the show. I see y'all that watch the hundreds of thousands of y'all that have checked out the content on this channel, pulling up every single Tuesday to chop it up with us. It's been a good one, man. I've appreciated it. And thank you for allowing me to share the airspace and the video with you, Matt. It's been a good one, man.
It's been awesome. And don't think we've seen the last of Ray Garvin here. We're definitely going to have him back many times throughout the offseason, especially once we get to draft season. Once I've finally caught up on some of these prospects, Ray and I will definitely be chopping it up when it comes to that time. But for now, tomorrow, we are going to put a bow on 2025 as Justin Boone joins me to preview both Week 18, yes, but also identify what we think are going to be some of the biggest fantasy storylines in 2026. That show is going to hit your feed live 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. So before you go out for your New Year's Eve celebrations, you pop some champagne and listen to that show with Justin Boone and I. That's going to be live 5 p.m. Eastern right here on YouTube. Until then, we are out.